I want to talk tonight, I'm starting a series that I think is really, really important. And I have come to understand something about campus ministry is that I can choose to challenge you for what lies ahead of you for the rest of your life, or I can choose to put my arm around you and, for lack of a better word, coddle you and make you feel good about where you're at right now. And sometimes that's appropriate, and sometimes, maybe more times than not, it's more appropriate for me to challenge you for what's coming. And this series I'm going to jump into is definitely going to fall into that category. And it's a series that I've never done before. It's a series through the book of Judges. Don't imagine there's an awful big list of sermons that you've heard through the book of Judges. It's kind of an odd book in the sense that it's depressing. There's just a lot of, well, there is some kind of neat reading. I was sitting in church this week, and my son was getting bored, so I gave him a few verses to read, and there's one where this big fat king got stabbed with a sword, and the fat went around the handle. I thought, oh, that's something my 13-year-old would probably enjoy reading. So I let him, and there's all kinds of weird things like that about thumbs and big toes being cut off and stuff. But that's maybe more for the guys. Tonight I'm going to talk specifically. Well, actually, the name of the series is Patterns of Destruction. And it is a series that within this book that shows definitely just that, patterns of destruction. There are a lot of faces, vivid faces and names specifically, that come flooding to my mind as I begin to think through this series. People that live in this town. People that I have talked to, people that I've prayed with, people that I've cried with, that have fallen into patterns of destruction. And I don't feel it's appropriate for me to name names and to share these, but please, largely because this is podcasted, but please know that I'm not speaking hypothetically. I'm speaking about things that are very real. And I think you know that as we get into some of the nature of what we're talking about. Tonight, we're going to be talking about the pattern of being swallowed by our culture, by blending into the neighborhood, by melting into the neighborhood. It is a topic that God addresses throughout Scripture. Numerous times throughout the Old Testament, especially through the book of Judges, you see this pattern of people repenting, God showing himself real, and then them going right back to adopting and prostituting over other gods. And the series and the cycle continues. Even in the book of Revelation, there is a Revelation 3. John is talking about seven different churches he's writing to. And the first and the seventh church are churches that have really adopted the culture. And the last one, the church of Laodicea, is kind of an interesting situation. And I think if you've been to Fuel, Brandon's talked probably more in depth about this than I will. But I was in Israel, and I saw... I didn't actually visit this particular spot, but I've heard of it, so maybe I'm not any more educated than you on this, but I do know that Laodicea was a city that had hot springs to one adjacent side of it, and there were cold water to the other adjacent side of it, almost to another region or city. And they borrowed that water from this town and from that town. And when John talks about, I wish you were neither hot nor cold. Or I wish you were either hot nor cold, but not lukewarm. Lukewarm, I'd rather have spewed out of my mouth. You guys familiar with that text? He's really talking about borrowing from the culture, borrowing from this town, Yeah, there's reasons for hot water. There's reasons for cold water. But when you pipe it in and you kind of borrow it, it kind of becomes lukewarm. And that's really, really a kind of an essence of what we're going to be talking about here, is how we have blended in and how that is a dangerous, dangerous thing for us as Christians. The USA has been referred to as the Great Melting Pot. And we know that Chicago is a great place for many different ethnic foods and ethnic groupings of people. And my friend Eric Tiro was raised in the south side of Chicago. And 30 years ago, Chicago looked a lot different than it does today. I talked to him a little bit today, and he was telling me how he could walk freely. That was a big difference between Chicago then and Chicago now. Everyone's kind of locked up inside. And he said there was, on his block, a block of 10 to 12 houses, there were 9 languages spoken. And there were different places around town that he could walk with his friends. And these different ethnic backgrounds, these different people from Germany, these different people from Finland, from Sweden, from China, would all have a very distinct dress, a certain attire. They'd have distinct foods. They'd have a distinct language. They'd have distinct music. And as you walked from this ethnic corner of Chicago to the next, you'd hear the language change. You would hear music change. You would be at this particular Danish bakery, and you'd go to this other unique ethnic bakery. And he says it was wonderful. And there really is something cool about these different cultures and these different languages and these different situations. And I have to start by saying that I apologize to a lot of you, because I know that I didn't intend for this to happen, but I kind of forgot to tell you that I was going to be in Mexico last week, right? And it was a great trip. And a lot of you were at Winter Retreat, and I was in the back talking to J.K. Jones, our speaker, and I hadn't talked to him for a long time. And he says, so you're going to be around this weekend? I said, well, I'm leaving I'm a little bit early. I'm going to go home with my family because I'll be gone next week. And I'm trying not to talk about it because he's about ready to go up and speak. And he says, well, where are you going to be? I said, well, I'm going to be in Mexico. Oh, what are you going to be doing? I'm going to be visiting campus ministry. And the next thing I know, J.K.'s up in front of everybody saying, well, let's just pray for Pete. It's a really dangerous place down in Mexico. And I'm like, I don't think I've told anybody yet. So I apologize for that shock to your system, if that was. But I assure you, I didn't intend to keep it a secret. It just didn't seem to come up. So I apologize. That's my fault. But it was a great trip. And I want to talk a little bit more about that as the evening goes on. But one of the things that I experienced last week was I experienced the fact that people in Mexico really do speak Spanish. I was like, wow, this is very, very Spanish. And and the people on the team, there's Americans down there that are serving. There's a team of about 5 or 6 Americans, and they are doing a great job while they're down there, and they are just fluent. And I am just amazed, you know, and I feel like a little 3-year-old idiot, you know. I'm just like, well, how do you guys, this is awesome. You guys are all, I'm like, I can't even feel like I can go to the bathroom by myself, you know. It's like, I need baños. Okay, I got that one as the week went on. But anyway, it's a beautiful language, and it just flows off of people's tongues. And it's just I think especially when you don't know Spanish, it sounds even more beautiful. You're just like, oh, that sounds so nice. You know, it's flowing. And as it's flowing out, I kind of get enamored with this. And then there was this one guy on campus who came up to me, knew I was American. I think it stood out pretty clear. And he said, he started talking to me and just dropping the F-bomb as many times as he could, because he knew I was American. And he thought, I'm going to try to speak this guy's language. I'm going to try to make him feel comfortable. This would be exactly what he will want, because he's American. I've watched the movies. And so you can imagine in my ears, as I'm listening to this beautiful language, and all of a sudden the guy trying to make me feel welcome. F. Wow. kind of a jolt to my system. And if I could maybe creep into my friend Eric's life a little bit and think of how different his perspective is upon Chicago as he goes back home and he hears that beautiful language being thrown in and exchanged for the F-bomb with people wearing jeans, listening to CeeLo while eating a Big Mac. I think he would realize and would agree that there is something ugly about us all blending into the neighborhood. When McDonald's are replacing these Danish bakeries, when we become one big clump of people that are, I guess, influenced by the same culture. That is exactly what happens in the book of Judges. That's exactly what's happening throughout the entire book. And so this series, I don't want you to get the idea that we're going to go through chapter 1 and 2 tonight, and then we're going to go through 3 and 4. It's a little bit more of an overview, and tonight's kind of an idea of just understanding just kind of what's throughout the entire book of Judges is this repetitive theme. And I'll just pick up chapter 2 and some of chapter 3, and we'll go ahead and read that together as our text for tonight. It says this: after the whole generation had been gathered to their fathers, another generation grew up who knew neither the Lord nor what he had done for Israel. Now, we talked a couple weeks ago that God has established and wanted to establish a covenant with us. And he established a covenant with his people Israel. And he said, I will be your God. I am all in. Are you all in? And initially they said yes. And that's kind of what the beginning of this is talking about. But as you'll see, even though God remains faithful, they do not. And then the Israelites did evil in the eyes of the Lord, and they served the Baals. It's a god. They forsook the Lord, the God of their fathers, who had brought them out of Egypt. They followed and worshipped various gods of the peoples around them. They provoked the Lord to anger because they forsook him, and they served Baal and the Asherah. In his anger against Israel, the Lord handed them over to the raiders who plundered them. He sold them to their enemies all around, whom they were no longer able to resist. Whenever Israel went on to fight, the hand of the Lord was against them to defeat them, just as he sworn to them. They were in great distress. And then the Lord raised up judges, hence the book, who saved them out of the hands of these raiders. Yet they would not listen to their judges, but prostituted themselves to other gods and worshipped them. Unlike their fathers, they quickly turned from the way in which their fathers had walked, the way of obedience to the Lord's commands. One more. The Israelites lived among the Canaanites, the Hittites, the Amorites, the Perizzites, the Hivites, the Jebusites. And they took their daughters in marriage, and they gave their own daughters to their own sons, and they served their gods. This is the theme. They blended into the neighborhood. They adopted the gods that were foreign. And the two gods were this: Baal and the Asherah. The second, the Asherah worship was very much a sexual worship. And we don't need to get into detail, but if you really want to understand the modern-day porn of the day, you can do a little study on Asherah pole. And this is what would be outside of each of their tents, and it was worship. And the other was Baal worship. And this was, Baal was kind of the all-encompassing god. He was the god of the crops, the god of the rain, the god of fertility, the god who was going to give them what they needed, the god of stuff. The god of materialism. And what I feel like has happened in our culture and what's happened in all cultures and what ends up happening to every culture is that we end up watching the same movies and the same shows, listening to the same music, and we end up getting the same message, and before long, we're all falling back in time, worshiping sex and stuff. And that's kind of where we have come. And I don't think there's a person here that would disagree that those are still our gods. So what do we do? How do we break free? How do we get out of this whole mess? How do we remain pure? How do we stay unaffected by this culture? I can tell you that there was a guy, and this is another vivid picture, a guy here in town who came to me and said, my son is in college now, and I'm afraid that he has really fallen away. He doesn't know the Lord. He doesn't want anything to do with it. I've raised him with Bible studies. I've taken him to church every week. But he doesn't know the Lord. What do I do? And that's a terrible place for me to be. It was like, hey, campus minister, save me now. I'm like, I'm sorry. I don't know what to tell you. There was a professor here on campus that he said, I don't know what's happened to my daughter, but I have invested in her. I've made her memorize a lot of scripture. She's been to church every week. She's even gone to Wednesday night youth programs. And she's living with her boyfriend and doesn't want anything to do with the Lord. What do I do? She's been swallowed up by the culture. And you guys are very familiar with the stories like this. If you're not even tempted yourself, you know of people around you that you can name. There's names coming to you. There's faces that come to you as well. I know this. So what do? I think there's three things that we end up falling in line with. There's three things that we end up running to. Three reactions, knee-jerk reactions, that aren't quite going to cut it, I'm afraid. The first is that we abstain from the culture. It's a knee-jerk reaction. Abstaining from culture is probably the one thing that I think we all initially kind of get. Germany, East Germany did this, built a big wall. And they said, let's keep everybody out. We'll keep our own culture inside. China did the same thing. It's the only thing that you can see from space that's man-made is this big wall that kept everybody out. But what they didn't recognize and what people today don't recognize is that when we build a big wall to keep culture out, it really does something to corrode the people that are in. It creates pride. It creates fear. And it certainly does not create freedom. These people are trapped. And I have seen many parents that have used this method, and they have said, we're not going to go to dances. We're not going to go to the movies. We're not going to hang out with people that drink. We're not going to talk to people who smoke. We're going to stay restrained. We're going to put up a wall. And the kids end up getting this mentality that I'm scared about culture. I am afraid. I am going to remain in this igloo of life. I'm going to become safe, but yet not in a free kind of a way. I happen to really appreciate, let me preface this next thing I'm going to say. I happen to really appreciate homeschooling. It's something that we even tried. We realized really quick that my wife and I just aren't good at it. And people that can do it well, I have great admiration and appreciation for. But there are two ways in which you can go about homeschooling. And one is to educate your kid, to prepare them to be all that they can be to meet this culture head on. Or there's the homeschoolers that say, close your eyes, kids, let's stay in the house. Let's put up a wall and let's protect you from seeing the things that are out there because I just want to keep you here for the rest of your life. It never, ever works. Culture ends up winning. And in those cases, sometimes it's even uglier than the alternative. Second thing that we often do is we want to change the culture. There was a guy here in town that knew of some video series about our history and how our country was founded. and understanding that it was really built on Christian principles, and I believe it. And it was a good video for me because I believe that. And he said, you got to show this to all of your students, and you got to be showing it to them like every semester, because if they could just understand, if the whole culture could just understand that we were built as a country on Christian principles, our culture will change. No, it won't. No, it won't. We sometimes think that education is going to change our culture, and we're dead wrong. If we could just set up Christian morals and police them, if we could just kind of keep this alcohol sales to a minimum, I think that we're going to really change this culture. Let's make sure that we can't buy alcohol before noon on Sunday. That'll change things. Oh, really? How is that working out for us? Did you guys know that in the mid-80s, this was a dry town? In the mid-80s, there was no alcohol supposedly allowed on this campus? Wasn't a whole lot different, I'm guessing. I really don't think that setting up rules, biblical rules or moral rules, is going to change anything, but we think that it will. If we could just get the right Christian celebrity to become a Christian, then things are going to really change. I used to kind of buy into this one. Like, you know, I think if we got the right guy to really become a Christian that's like in the spotlight, I really think that Christ and culture could get along. I really believe that. Come on, Tim Tebow. Let's do it, baby. Change culture for us. How's that working? The guy tries to pray, and we call it Tebowing. It's not working, people. I mean, I'm all about Tebow, and I think he's doing a great job, but you know what? He's not going to change culture. He's not going to do it. He's a good example for us that get it, that understand, but he's not changing much. We're just going to redefine things. We're just going to change terms to T-Bowing or whatever it might be. I know if we could just get enough people to show up to a conference, if we could get enough people to understand that passion is where it's at, we're going to change the world. The world's going to change if we get enough people with passion. A few years ago, there was this thing called, what was the men's one? I'm trying to think. Somebody help me. Huh? Promise Keepers. Somebody said it, I think, under their breath. Promise Keepers. And there was this big push to get 1 million men in Washington, D.C. It was like, are we going? We're going to go. Let's go. Let's get everybody to go. We're going to get 1 million people. We're going to all go to Washington, D.C. And they all showed up, and there's just all these men. And it was really, really cool for a day. Culture hasn't changed much. You're not going to change it, people. You can engage with it. You can challenge it. We can influence it some. But it's always going to be in your face. And that's just the facts. The Bible tells us so. Well, Pete, this isn't very encouraging. You can't abstain from it. You can't change it. So what are we supposed to do? I know we'll create our own subculture. And we'll get Christian t-shirts. And we'll get Christian bracelets, and we'll listen to Christian radio, and we'll get a CNN or CBN or whatever that's called. We'll get a Christian TV station, and we'll just be Christian all the time. It'll work great. You wait and see, Pete. We're just going to get a whole Christian subculture going. How's that working? There's a scripture I wanted to share about changing the culture that I forgot, and I'm going to read it to you now. Jesus had a very famous sermon, and in that famous sermon, he stood up, and he said a very odd sentence. He said, "Do not give dogs what is sacred. Do not throw your pearls to pigs. If you do, they will trample them under their feet and then turn and tear you to pieces. What's that all about? What he's saying there is he's saying when a culture, when a people, when people don't know the king, are in your presence and you're trying to give them a gift that makes sense, that's valuable, that's about Jesus, and they don't understand it, they're just going to trample it. They're not going to get what to do with it. And they're going to turn and tear you to pieces. There's two people that are frustrated when you throw pearls to swine. You're frustrated because it's like, dude, you're not handling this properly. This was a pretty awesome gift that I gave you, and you're just going to step all over it. But you got to understand that the swine, they're pretty frustrated too. What am I supposed to do with this? Can you see how there's a conflict of interest? I'm going to jump to the point. I'm going to tell you right now, people without the kingship, without understanding who the king is, aren't going to get it. And they shouldn't, quite frankly. It only makes sense to us who have it. So back to our create our own culture. I am not trying to step on toes here, but I want to point out the Amish community, a lot of what they stand for, I have great, great respect. But what they have, in a sense, done is they have said, I'm going to pick a certain year in history, and we're going to preserve that year. And we're not going to drive. We're not going to have technology. We're going to dress a certain way, and we're going to grow our beards long. And we're going to protect ourselves, and we're going to create a subculture. And we don't need the outside. And if I need help raising my barn, I got my buddies and my bros, and we'll come over and we'll raise a barn. And there is a take care of your own mentality that says, I'm just going to create my own subculture. The Mennonites have picked a different year. There are other churches that I know of that have a very similar mentality. We'll just take care of our own. Some of you know some of those churches' names. And here's what we end up sort of believing when we create our own culture, is that we believe that if we go to church, if we pray before meals, if we practice certain ethics and certain traditions, that we're going to protect the Christian culture and our kids are going to be changed. Now, here's where my advice to you comes to play for what's tomorrow. You will be parents before long, and you will have to decide, what am I going to do as a parent? What am I going to allow my kid to see, to experience, to be a part of? And by no stretch of the imagination of my saying, let your kid do whatever he wants and see whatever he wants and talk however he wants. That's not what I'm saying. But I am going to tell you this, that if you believe that Christian morals, Christian ethics, and Christian traditions are going to save your kid, you're dead wrong. There is not enough traditions or hoops that they can jump through that are going to protect them, that are going to keep the identity of Christ alive. And I guess what I'm saying here is that if we only had these three options, we got no hope. But fortunately, I think that there is an option. And there is something that we need to latch on to. And it's something we need to latch on to tonight so that we can be ready for tomorrow. And that's this. That we have to understand that we are in, but we are not of this culture. You guys have heard that phrase before, be in the world, but don't be of it. Jesus put it this way in John 15:19. He said, if you belonged to the world, it would love you as its own. As it is, you do not belong to the world, but I have chosen you out of the world. And that's why the world hates you. You're not of this world. And so what we have to understand is this, and this is my whole point tonight. Tune your ears to this. Tune your ears to this. This is the key. This is the whole key. If you want to preserve the Christian life that you know is true and not be swallowed by this culture, this is what you have to do. Are you ready? You need to bow a knee to the King. It's the only way. There's no way that you're going to protect your culture. There's no way you're going to abstain from the culture. There's no way you're going to change the culture. The only thing that you can do is bow a knee to the Lord and understand that you're not of the culture. You live here, but you're not of it. You have a different King. And until people have the King, they have no chance. That has always been the theme of the Lord. Have a covenant with me, and I will make you mine. No matter what the culture is around, I will protect you, I will preserve you, I will give you what you need. I am the King. And so here's a few thoughts that I have now, is that we need to understand that we're not here to change the culture, we're here to change hearts. We're to invest in people's hearts one at a time. And investing in hearts is the only way. It's the only way. I noticed something this week. I went down, I'll tell you a little bit about my trip as I close. So I went down to Puebla. And there's a campus ministry down there. I'm good friends with a guy named Phil who was here last semester with Global Scope. I don't know how many of you remember him or not, but they are starting campus ministries around the world. And this has been a real heart of mine for a long time. Because in 1997, I was like 2 years into this job, and I went to a campus ministers retreat. And I was telling some guys this, as they picked me up from the airport the other night, that when I went, my first couple years before I actually came here, I had the fortune of just being a part of two groups that went to Hungary and went to the Philippines. And I was able to help start two campus ministries in those places. And in 1997, I ended up going to a campus ministers retreat, and this guy stood up and said, "Let's name all the campus ministries overseas." I was like, "Cool, I want to hear." I was really excited about that because it's a little bit of my background, and I was hoping to hear what God was doing in other parts of the world. And they said, "There's this guy in France, I think, who's doing ministry," who I found out later really wasn't, but maybe he did a little something, and then he got divorced, and things didn't work out so well, and that kind of fizzled. And then somebody stood up and said, "Brad Coco is doing ministry in Hungary." And I was like, "That's my brother who replaced me from that ministry I started. That's kind of weird. I guess that counts." And then someone else said, there's a guy in Philippines named Arnold doing campus ministry." I was like, "I started that one too. Anyone else? Anyone else? Nope. Okay. Go back to your dorms." I went back to this dorm because we're at this retreat. I went back to this dorm, and I cried. I cried my eyes out because I knew what little effort I had put forth. There was no pride in me, trust me. And I had cried my eyes out because, I said, there needs to be more done, because I know how easy it was to just be available to do two ministries. And I realized then that what God was doing is he took me in the midst of this culture, and he kind of pulled me out, and he says, I want you to understand that culture, you're bigger than that. I've got bigger plans for you than the white picket fence or whatever it is that your dreams are, Pete. I got bigger dreams for you than adapting into whatever the major is that you're in and what your professors say that you can be. I want you to start some things overseas." And in that moment, I prayed, "God, would someone else rise up? Would you raise somebody up to do campus ministry overseas? Because it is a glaring, glaring issue, a glaring problem." And since then, we've been able, fortunately, to start a couple other campus ministries in the Philippines through our ministry here and through many of your efforts, and I thank you for that. But outside of that, I hadn't really seen or heard or experienced much else. And Phil Tatum has headed up this organization called Global Scope, and they have now 7 campus ministries around the world. I'm not going to name all of them, but I know that there's one in Spain, Germany, England, Thailand, Chile, in Mexico. Maybe there's six, maybe there's seven. I don't know. I might be missing one. But I got to go down and got to visit one of those ministries last week. And I got to tell you, it warmed my soul. It warmed my soul that there are people that are actually exiting this cultural swallowing and understanding that they have a higher call to do ministry. Now, our method, our system, I guess, that's been established with the Philippines is let's just let the native people do it from the ground up. And we have a pretty neat system there where we have a relationship with a Bible college, and we know Arnold's native, and you'll meet him in a month, and there's a lot of cool stuff that just kind of made that naturally happen for natives. But around the rest of the world, they really need Americans to come in and establish these ministries. And here's the stat that I found to be just amazing. Global Scope has only been in business for 10 years. They've only been doing campus ministry for 10 years. And they have had 69 students from one campus ministry, not much different than the size of our campus ministry, that have said, sign me up upon graduation for 2 years to be a campus minister on a team in Chile, in England, in Spain, in Thailand, in Germany, in Mexico. And that really struck me, that there is one campus ministry at Georgia Tech that understands fully what it means to not be absorbed by the culture, to know that they've got a big dollar job waiting, because all of them that graduate from there are almost all engineering degrees, not teacher degrees. And if they can raise support and give up that because they understand that God has called them to that, I wonder what God might be able to do with us. And I'm telling you, I am all in. I am all in on partnering with them and trying to influence you guys to be at least consider doing a year or two with them upon your graduation. And I think that might be the place where I'd like to leave. I don't know of a better application to leave you with than to think about what it means to say, hey, culture tells me this, but because I know the King, I've got bigger plans than any teaching job could ever offer. And I want to give you that challenge. And I don't want to say that that's the only route for you, and if God's really calling you to something else, hey, I trust the Lord in you. But sometimes we're not challenged enough to even know that there's options like that. And to hear that nearly 70 students from one campus are changing the world literally gets me excited. And I hope it gets you excited too about how you might be like a Pete Coco that says, you know, I'm 20 years old, but I don't know what I'm doing, but I'm willing. I'm willing to try something. I'm willing to maybe not be so connected to this culture that I might even dare to go to a foreign culture like Thailand and be a campus minister for a year or two before I start working on my 401k. I got this, I want to end by letting you know that there is a book before the book of Judges. Joshua. And Joshua was the man in charge, and he was a godly man. And they didn't really have as many of these problems with Joshua in charge. Largely because Joshua, I think, understood that this cultural problem was not something that you could address to a whole group. It was something that you had to grab hold of and make personal to yourself. And in Joshua 24:15, he says, I don't know about the rest of the world. I don't know about the rest of culture. But as for me and my house, we're going to serve the Lord. And I have that reminder, if you've ever been to my house, I pulled this off of my wall before I came tonight. Maybe that's too small for you to read, but that's all it says, is as for me and my house, I'm going to serve the Lord. And I'm making mistakes, and my kids have got iPods in their ears all day long, and they're watching movies, and culture's just bombarded them. And I worry about that, sure, like anyone would. But I am trusting. I am trusting that this is the answer. That I want to make sure that my house is in order, like Joshua had Israel's house in order before this whole Judges thing had to happen. And my prayer for you is the very same thing. That as for you, and when you get married, and when you have kids, and when it's 5 years from now and 10 years from now, that you will say, as for me and my house, we're going to serve the King. And my life is going to be changed because of that. And let culture do whatever the heck it wants to. Let's stand. God, I want to thank you for providing a way out, for being the King. And I ask, God, that we would surrender to you, that we'd bow a knee to you, that we would understand that you are the only way out. You've always been the only way out. And that we cannot hide behind traditions. We cannot hide behind ethics. We cannot hide behind the things that we think are going to protect us from this culture around and keep us from being swallowed up. But that we would have a boldness within our gut that says, God, you are my God. I will serve you and you only. And I ask, God, that if there are people here that have not made that covenant with you, who have not been all in with you, that would happen, that would happen tonight. And that we would understand that you really are the one that's worth serving and giving us the kind of life that we really want to have. And it's in Jesus' name we pray.